Hi, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going through some big changes here at bbsradio.com. And when you go into our website now, if you have not already discovered it, you will need to log in. So it will take you an extra moment or two, but once you do that, then you're going to be able to pop in and visit with us at any time, 7 days a week, and also to be able to have access to our archives, etc. Now, for those of you that are a little bit perplexed and you're going, my goodness, what is this all about? Well, we're going through some wonderful changes here at bbsradio.com, and it is enabling us to find out more about you, where you're calling in from, etc., etc. So bear with us as we're going through these changes, because we are doing this actually because we want to make our programming even better for you. We are all about mind power here at the Donna Sebo Show. Also, we have guests regularly, and today is not any different. We have a delightful guest, Eleanor Wiley. Her fascinating book, and I have to tell you, it's a very personal book. And Eleanor, where are you located?
I live in Alameda, California.
You're a California girl.
Yes, originally from New Jersey, but California since 1957.
Your book has a very interesting title, There Are No Mistakes, Becoming Comfortable with Life as It Is, Not as It Should Be. I want my audience to know a little bit about you. You have authored other books before, but you've followed a patterning in life that's a little bit different. At the age of 58, you began to make prayer beads and teaching workshops all over the world. You've had very, very famous people, including the Dalai Lama and Ram Dass, who have purchased your beads.
They didn't purchase them. They were given them as gifts.
Oh, I beg your pardon. That's my error. Thank you for correcting me. And beading is very important to you, and you have a fascinating story. And you also had been a acquisitions editor for HarperCollins out of San Francisco.
No.
You have just had a very unique background.
I've had a unique background, but HarperCollins is not part of it.
Well,
I don't know where that came from.
Well, I just have the information right here in front of me in big print.
Well, somebody, I didn't send it to you.
Well,
somebody else made a mistake.
This is a fascinating day. Now, you describe yourself as being a very, very comfortable person. And most people, when they meet you, perceive you in that way. And you say that you always like to wear some of your art. However, your life didn't follow that patterning for a long time. Tell us your story.
Well, my story is long and intricate because I'm 70 years old now, and that surprises me every day. But I started my life out as a speech therapist, and then I became a hospital administrator. I had a daughter who died when she was 3, which really threw me for a big loop.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a long time. I couldn't say I was comfortable with that when it happened. I had a lot of grief there.
Sure.
But what she did teach me after many years of coming to terms with it was that all we have is this moment.
Mm-hmm.
So the gift of her death was me learning that all we have is this moment, and we better enjoy it or take care of it, do with it what we need to do with it, because that's all we've got. So that was the first big hit in the head I got. And all the while I was sort of slowly working up to being a full-blown alcoholic, but you wouldn't have caught me saying that at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Either. And then, let's see, I got divorced, and that threw me for another big loop, because being the good Catholic girl that I was, I would never have done that. And I was very angry, hurt, disturbed, but then put one foot in front of the other again. And then I decided at some point I needed to I was in private practice, and I decided I needed to have a regular job that gave me a retirement, because I was getting older. And so I went back to graduate school and got my master's degree in hospital administration. And while I was in graduate school, I didn't drink. because you can't drink and study at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't because I thought I was an alcoholic. It was just because I thought that I had to study. So during that period of time, that 18 months, a friend of mine introduced me to meditation. And so I started a meditation practice. I had done yoga, which is meditative, but I started a sitting practice, both with a Christian community and a Buddhist community. So during the 18 months when I was only drinking on Sundays, I developed this meditation practice. So I finished graduate school. I'm working as a hostel administrator, and it gave me the shingles.
Gave you the shingles?
Yes. I am not cut out to be a hostel administrator. I'm cut out to be a therapist.
Isn't it amazing how our body gives us signals and information in ways that we would never dream?
Oh, and for me, I don't know about other people. Back then, I had to get hit in the head really hard before I listened to my body. So, but the shingles was a big hit. So I quit. Well, I had to quit my job. I couldn't continue doing it. It just, the shingles blew me away. And so I went back to being a therapist. And when I finished graduate school, I also started drinking again. And it didn't take me any time at all. I started drinking again in May. By December, I knew I was an alcoholic. And I say that it's my meditation practice that allowed me to recognize that in myself, because you have to see yourself when you're sitting and meditating.
Mm-hmm.
So then at 58, someone asked me to help them string some beads. And I said, I don't know how, which was the best three words or four words, however many that is, that I ever said. She said, I'll show you. So I started stringing beads, and people bought them. And I kept doing that. And then in, that was 94. But in 93, a big thing happened. I didn't know it again at the time. I went to a gathering called the Parliament of the World's Religions. And that's a gathering that happens once every 5 years. And people from all religions you've heard of and not heard of come together to, the first one was to form a global ethic. And I went to that, and it was wonderful. There were 8,000 people from all over the world, every religion I'd heard of and not heard of. And it was like going on a trip to the world. I mean, it was amazing. And I heard a talk on the sacred wheel, and I was so intrigued with it that I bought the tape. And I brought it home, and I just stuck it away and didn't think about it again. And So in 96, I was asked to teach a meditation class at our local yoga studio, and I knew by that time that beading was a meditative practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked up the word bead, and it turns out that the word bead comes from the Anglo-Saxon bidin, which means to pray. Well, that did it. My beads turned into prayer beads. I knew that sort of was going on, but I formally changed the name of the company that I had created from Wiley's Works into Contemporary Prayer Beads. And I would put pieces on from all the different traditions. So my beads became interfaith prayer beads. And I used to do lots of conferences. I exhibited it. I started out with Omega, and then people from Healing Touch would come to that, and they'd say, oh, you should come to our conference. And so then I started going to lots of different conferences and meeting amazing, amazing people. And I always kept beads in my pocket to give to people that I felt needed them. And that's how Ram Dass got his prayer beads. I'd heard Ram Dass many times, and when he had his stroke, I was very interested in his language,
mm-hmm.
and from my speech pathology background, and I gave him prayer beads, and he's done the world of aging such a gift, because he's so open about his disabilities, and people are willing to wait till he can come up with the words that he needs to find, and I think his meditation practice allows him to be comfortable with his life as it is, even though it's very different than what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how he got his beads. The Dalai Lama got his beads. I went to a couple of retreats with him. I also belong to a group called the World Community for Christian Meditation, and Father Lawrence Freeman, who's the head of that, and His Holiness have done several retreats on Buddhist-Christian dialogue. And I was going to one in India, and I just decided I was going to make prayer beads for him, which I did, and then I got to present them to him, which made me speechless.
I can imagine. Well, here you've gone through this journey.
Oh.
And your book, There Are No Mistakes, Becoming Comfortable with Life as It Is, Not as It Should Be. This is a great deal of wisdom that you have decided to impart, to share with others. And one of your statements right off the bat is that you need to honor where you come from. And for some people, that would be pretty tough because maybe where they come from has an origination that's dark and ugly and violent and distasteful. I mean, there's all kinds of adjectives we could use.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that so important to honor where you come from?
Well, if we can't honor where we come from, we can't appreciate where we are. And as difficult as many people's lives are, and it's not just my life in the book, it's the wonderful stories people have told me over the years. The one that pops out at me is the young woman who lost her arms in a fire. And she honors when she came to my class, I was blown away because here comes this woman with two prosthetic hooks, one on each hand, and she's coming to make prayer beads. And I'm going, oh my God, you know, how am I going to do this? And then I stepped out of the way and realized, she was the one who was doing it. I was just there to help her.
Mm-hmm.
And the beads that she made honored the fire and the gifts that she got from the fire. Instead of hating the fire and what happened to her, she honored where she came from because it happened to her when she was 11.
Now, this brings up a very profound point, which is another segment in your book. How we need to own our pain, hurt, and vulnerability. And when I came across those words, I had thoughts run through my head. Wait a minute. Own it? We don't want to own this. We want to get rid of it. We don't want to have it. Explain why you have this feeling about owning your own pain, hurt, and vulnerability.
Well, if we keep stuffing it down and making believe it doesn't exist and throwing it away, it pops back up at us. And so if we can own it and be comfortable with our discomfort, then we can just be present with it. Because it's going to change. You know, nothing stays the same. But if we make believe it doesn't exist, then it's going to come up and bite us.
I really like a comment that you have in here. Or actually, it's a question. How well do you accept help? And I can think on so many instances in my life, I would say to myself, thank you, I can do it myself.
Yeah, exactly.
If we're so childlike, and I just have to own up to this because I have done this many, many times. It's
mm-hmm.
like, this is, you got to be the tough cookie here, and you got to get this stuff done, and by golly, you're going to do it all by yourself. Otherwise, you're not worth anything. And
right.
A lot of it has to do with indoctrination, but asking for help. Wow, that was a tough one for me to get to. How did you manage to get to that?
Little by little, and I'm still not really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to keep reminding myself every day. I just went to a retreat down in Arizona with Joan Chittister and Father Richard Rohr, and I've had plantar fasciitis, and my feet are not too hot right now, and I'm not supposed to walk that much, so I decided, okay, I'm going to get a wheelchair in the airport. Well, that's really humbling to be pushed through the airport in a wheelchair. And then I got to the conference, and I saw they had a sign that said, if you have any kind of physical or hearing impairments, let us know, and we will give you preferential seating. Well, I don't hear very well either. And it's the first time I've ever done it. I said, I don't hear well. And I got a seat right up front, and I could hear everybody. And it's hard. I mean, it's I have to keep reminding myself to do it. I have wonderful friends, though. There's a group of us. We're called the Walkie Talkies, because we talk as much as we walk. And
the Walkie Talkies, I like that.
It's wonderful. And we force each other into asking for help when we need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all between 50 and 70, and we all, well, it doesn't make any difference how old you are. We all need help from time to time.
I find that so true. I look back on when I was quite young, and it was just this idea, if I ask for help, people are going to think I'm weak. Mm-hmm. And I had my mentor teach me a lesson, and it was quite a profound one, and I'll just share this with you, and I know you'll appreciate it. She wanted to do something for me, and I said, oh, no, no, because she was older, she was wiser. After all, she was teaching me, and I was the student. And I said, oh, no, you can't do that. And she just looked at me, and she said, now, I want to ask you a question. How is it that, how do you feel when you do something for someone? And I said, well, I feel great. She said, now, why are you going to deny me the opportunity to feel the same way?
Right, right.
And I went, I think I just got a lesson.
Yeah, yeah. Well, working with the old people, I worked in convalescent hospitals my whole life. And I know from that experience that the people who were willing to ask for help when they needed it and were gracious, accepting help, were the ones everybody wanted to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
Because other people would say, oh, no, I can do it myself. And then they'd hurt themselves and make everybody miserable.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can be gracious, accepting help, it does allow other people to receive that gift of feeling good.
Absolutely. And I have observed through the years, and I think back to myself, when I was younger, being around older people, I wanted to do things for them.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to prove my value as a young person and my sincerity in that I cared.
Yeah.
And I think that we deny young people that opportunity when we don't give them the privilege of assisting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
It does not, when you're mature and you're older, you are going to, as my mentor said, deny them that sense of joy and, gee whiz, I did something nice for somebody. I helped so-and-so today. So
mm-hmm.
Let me ask them, what have you done today? Well, I helped this person take stuff out, and this person was so nice to me. They said, thank you. And it just makes a difference.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
It makes a difference. Now, you have been telling your story, and your candor and your openness about it is just delightful. And, of course, your book, There Are No Mistakes, goes into a great deal more detail. But you also bring a point that we need to be able to tell our story and allow it to evolve. How can someone practice telling their story?
Well, I think people have to be very careful when they're telling their stories that they feel safe telling their stories. I have a young friend who's bipolar, and she has to be very careful where she tells her story because people have such a thing about mental illness. So I think the first thing that people have to do is find somebody. There's always a 12-step program where you can go and practice telling your story, and you don't necessarily have to be an alcoholic. There's 12-step programs for everything
mm-hmm.
nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And your stories are confidential there. So when you tell your story, you have to be comfortable and trusting of the people that you're telling your story to. And then part of telling your story is also listening to other people's stories. Because if all we do is talk, I have a terrible habit of doing that, getting going and not letting anybody else in it.
Well, you belong to the walkie-talkies, for heaven's sake.
Right, and I'm the youngest of nine children. And if you didn't talk, nobody... I mean, going to my family reunions is hilarious. Everybody's talking and nobody's listening. But and being able to listen so other people can tell their stories. I mean, the stories in the book, I'm so honored and humbled by the fact that all the people who told me their stories trusted me to tell their story. And they are just all wonderful, ordinary people. So that was one way, just to tell. Or just write your story out.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling yourself your story.
Mm-hmm.
And do you believe it?
Now, you talk about creating a toolbox. What is the toolbox you refer to?
Well, the toolbox are things that help you get through the day from day to day. Taking a nap can be a tool. That was a tool my mother taught me about. My mother took a nap every day from 1 to 2, and if you talked to her or interrupted her, the house better be on fire. Another tool for me is meditation.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, it's gardening. For others, it's walking. So there are things that allow us and remind us to stay in the present moment, whether it's eating a proper diet. But we can have, it could be a strand of prayer beads that you use. But once you find a tool, you have to use it in order for it to work. You can, lots of people collect 7,000 books on how to do this and how to do that, but they never do the practices that are written about. Or
mm-hmm.
or they have this wonderful Buddha sitting in their house, and it becomes a decoration rather than something that reminds us to come into the present moment. So finding things that work for yourself, what works for me might not work for you. But once I have it, I have to use it, because otherwise it'll just get rusty.
As we're closing out the interview, I want to address one of the chapters that you have, and I really like this one. Trust that you will be okay on this path called life. Trust. That's a five-letter word that is just so important and so powerful. When you were going through your changes, how did you learn that trust was so important for you?
Oh, by the gifts of being able to wake up the next morning and put one foot in front of the other, and when I trust, it doesn't mean that I'm not scared. It doesn't mean that I don't worry. It just means that I know that I can make it through to the next. To the next change that's going to happen. My daughter's right now planning on moving up to Oregon, and I just have to trust that I'm not going to miss her too much.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it's going to be hard. I know I'm going to miss her. I won't be able to run over and take care of my granddaughter when she needs me. But I trust that my life will still be on the right path.
You have a wonderful story in here about a man named Jim. And it's right towards the end of your book, and it begins with the words, you do not have to wait.
Uh-huh.
And Jim, well, his story was pretty special. What was it about Jim, when you put that chapter together, that made his story so significant?
Well, I've known Jim since he was a little boy and watched him grow and change. And he got into real difficult trouble. We can't tell the whole story. We don't have time. But he ended up in federal prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I just spent 5 days with he and his wife in Washington, D.C. He has his doctorate in public health now, and he's helping with the AIDS epidemic throughout the world. That's the work he does now. And he realized he was in his mid-30s, that he was an alcoholic. That's what got him into trouble, and that's what got him into jail. But he did not wait until he was my age before he started doing something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's doing something about it now, and he's having a wonderful life because of it. I mean, it's not that he still doesn't have difficulties, and we talked a lot about recovery and that while we were together, but it was just such a joy seeing him
mm-hmm.
and listening to him be able to tell his story.
There are no mistakes.
There are no mistakes, and he knew that.
And when you picked that title, and with all of the material that's in your book, and for those of you who have been listening, Eleanor Wiley is my guest today. Her book, There Are No Mistakes, Becoming Comfortable with Life as It Is, Not as It Should Be. We all have our twists and turns. I've yet to meet a human being that has not had those twists and turns. And when you go through them, when you can have something like Eleanor's wisdom to dip into, when maybe you're feeling really thirsty for something that can give you a sense of sustenance in your mind and your heart, There Are No Mistakes is a very good book to have in hand, have in your library. Eleanor, what's your website? So if people want to find out about your prayer beads, because this is something that is very, very much in your life, and it doesn't make any difference what a person's cultural background is, because anyone can use these beads. How do they get in touch with you? What's your website?
It's spelled really funny. It's www.prayer, P-R-A-Y-E-R, B as in boy, D as in dog, Z as in zebra, S as in Sam, .com. But if they can't remember how to spell it, they can just Google my name and it'll come up.
And that's Eleanor Wiley, W-I-L-E-Y, and Eleanor is spelled E-L-E-A-N-O-R. Eleanor, as we're closing out on this interview, is there a special thought you would like to leave with my listeners for today?
Oh, wow. Just go for it. If it's a sad day, let yourself be sad. If it's a happy day, let yourself be happy. But just be in the present moment and know that it's okay.
And just know that where you are in this moment is where you are growing and where you are going to become the bigger and better self that you're earnestly trying to find, that you're trying to seek out in your own way.
And as my Buddhist teacher would say, and that's not always so thrilling.
Well, Eleanor, you're delightful. And I think laughing about life and looking at a lot of different things and savoring a moment, as you said, it's very great. And you and your walkie-talkie gals, which I think is just absolutely fabulous. I love that. The walkie-talkie group, you must just absolutely light up everything and everybody around in your environment wherever you go.
We do.
And they must just say, wow, I don't know what it is with these people, but they're sparkling when they come in and they're sparkling when they're going out.
Uh-huh.
And I just think it's great. That's wonderful. Well, Eleanor, you have a fabulous book, There Are No Mistakes, Becoming Comfortable with Life as It Is, Not as It Should Be, is something that should be in someone's library. And I think you've given a lot of your own wisdom, and I wish you continued good fortune. You're 70 years young. My goodness, think of what you're going to be able to accomplish before you're 100.
Oh, I don't want to go that long. Thank you very much. Well, it has been an absolute delight talking with you.
You have a fabulous day.
I will.
This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be taking a break in just a moment. Our telephone lines will be open. 877-876-5227 is the telephone number for you to call into. And don't forget, you've got to log in now on bbsradio.com. Yes, it'll take you a moment to do that, but just know that once it's done, you won't have to do it again, and you'll be able to listen at your convenience anytime, anyplace, anywhere, as long as you have a computer. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are open at 877-876-5227. Give us a call if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight. I want to let you know that this weekend, the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair is getting ready to open its doors. Oh, my goodness, I was over there setting up my booth, and it is just amazing. It's fascinating to see a whole area of land, a few acres that maybe some cows have been on recently or whatever. It's just open land, and watch the transformation, all of the tents that go up, because the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair is about the 16th century, and people lived in tents. They had these portable houses that they took with them everywhere. There were also the castles, and you had your knights and the jousting and all of this type of good stuff. Well, it is absolutely incredible, and people are coming in from all over, and they're participating in this with their wares, with their skills, their abilities, and I'm also going to be there. And where it is at the Mentor Creek Ranch in Gig Harbor, Washington, and all you have to do is go to their website, WashingtonRenFair.com. That's Washington, RENFAIRE.com. Or you can call them at their 800 number, 359-5948. and get information from them. It is just incredible. Now, if you go to their website, you can get your tickets in advance. You also will get a discount on your tickets, and you won't have to stand in long lines. And, oh, my goodness, we have such gorgeous weather here in the Pacific Northwest. So this weekend, these next 3 weekends, are just going to be incredible. It's perfect for the family. Bring the children. Bring aunts, uncles, friends, neighbors, whoever you want, and just know you're going to have a fabulous day of fun. The gates open, and it was my error before. I was saying 9 o'clock. It opens at 10. And the gates open at 10, and they're open until 6, and it's just magical. You'll have an absolutely fabulous time. So I hope to see you out there, and I'm going to, like I said, have a booth. Look for the booth that has the bright golden banners that have huge red lions on them, and that is where I am. You can't miss it. It's just absolutely beautiful to see, and just come on in and say hello. I would love to meet you. Donna Sebo here. Also, I wanted to mention BBS Radio is going through some changes, and you're going to notice that if you want to hear the shows, you're going to need to log in, and it's still free to listen to the programming, but you're going to say, well, gee, why do I have to do all of this now? I didn't have to do it before. Well, what we're wanting to do is find out more about who's calling in, from what part of the country, and it allows us to find out how many listeners we have to the show. And there's all kinds of good things that are going to be changing, and you'll be getting information about that as we go along. So as you've logged in, wherever you are in the country, just know that once you do it, you're not going to have to do it again. So just be aware, BBS Radio is growing, and it is expanding. So we want you to be a part of that, and we'll keep you informed to the best of our capabilities as we go through all of these changes. Again, if you'd like to talk with me, give me a buzz at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Now, have you ever had money troubles? I'd be surprised if you'd say, no, I've never had money problems. I don't know of anybody, including myself, that hasn't had something affect them regarding money. And there is a gal, July Astengo of Linwood, Washington. And she had a special story, which I thought I would like to share with you today. She said, when I was a little girl, my mother used to hide money in secret places around the house in case we would need money in an emergency. I think her mother would have been called a little squirrel. That's the nickname that was given to people that save money when I was growing up anyway. They're squirreling away the money, just like the little squirrels squirrel away their walnuts. Well, we human beings squirrel away our dollars. And her cash stashing habit made everybody chuckle until they needed something. Then Mom would reach into a drawer or behind a piece of furniture and pull out the money to pay for it. Now, Mom passed away, and every now and then in her home, we would find another stash, and it would just pop up out of nowhere. And we would always realize that this is what Mom had done. She just stuffed stuff away. Well, finally, after a few years, they figured they had found everything. Well, not too long ago, July's sister, and her name is Kathy, they ended up relocating. And the family had to move from their home in Washington State all the way to Texas. Now, they were talking frequently by phone. However, July really missed her sister. And she just was so sad about this. And she was pregnant and was expecting her baby, and she knew she was going to have a C-section. And she just said, you know, sis, I really miss you. I wish you could be here with me when the baby comes. And her sister Kathy said, well, I do too, but I just don't know how we can ever afford the trip. And she said, oh, boy, yeah, I know how hard it is for you, having made the move to Texas and, you know, with the family and everything. Don't worry about it. Your bills are more important than your being with me. However, July would do something. She would just think about it. She would just do a little meditation about it. She hoped that something would open up so that the dollars would be there so that her sister could come. Well, they just kept working on this and working on this. Now, there came a call a few days later, and it came from Kathy's husband. He said, you're not going to believe this. I knocked a picture of ours off the living room wall, and there was a cash batch sticking out of the back of the frame. It's $1,000, exactly what we need to take care of all of our bills. Well, Kathy was ecstatic. They said she called her sister, July, and July said, "That's Mom. That's one of Mom's stashes." And they said, "Yep, what do you know? Mom saved the day again." Isn't life fascinating? Here was all that money that was stowed away, and Kathy's husband just happened to find it because the picture fell. Well, there's all kinds of wonderful stories like that that occur in people's lives. And as it turned out, Kathy was able to be with her sister July when she had her baby. And, of course, that's what they had wanted to be able to do all the time. Life has a way of working out sometimes, doesn't it? In ways that we would never expect. And, well, when that happens, it's not always easy for us to get down in the mouth about life. Then we feel good. We say, yes, something's working for me. Well, I know many times we don't always get exactly what we want, but often there's a lot of good things that are happening around us, and things do work out better than we ever dreamed or expected. And you need to sort of trust and have faith that something is going to be able to work out for you, and just get out and do what you need to do about life and walk the walk. Now, you know I just absolutely love to give out recipes. Well, I've got one today for an orange poppy seed bundt cake that I think you would really like. If you're like me and you have a sweet tooth, but you wish you had certain things that you could fix that wouldn't be high in calories, and you're not going to have, you know, 2 minutes on the lips and 45 years on the hips. So let's take a look at this recipe, because it is one that is so easy, and it has such a delicious flavor, and it will be eye-pleasing as well as taste-pleasing. Now, this is what we've got. For this orange poppy seed bundt cake, the normal recipe, the classic recipe that you can use, is about 450 calories per slice with 24 grams of fat. And this version that I'm going to be sharing with you really is very different. It's only 342 calories with only 10 grams of fat. So you're going to have taste, and you're going to feel satisfied, but not have all of those additional calories. So let's go for the recipe. It's 3.5 cups of flour, 3.5 cups of flour, 1.5 teaspoons of baking soda, 1.5 teaspoons of baking soda, 1 teaspoon each of baking powder and salt, 1 teaspoon each baking powder and salt, 2 cups of fat-free sour cream, 2 cups fat-free sour cream, 1 1/3 cups of granulated sugar, 1 1/3 cups of granulated sugar, 2/3 cup of oil, 2/3 cup of oil, 1/2 cup plus 2 tablespoons of fat-free milk, 1/2 cup plus 2 tablespoons of fat-free milk, 6 egg whites, 3 tablespoons plus 1.5 teaspoons of grated orange zest. And fresh is fabulous, but if you don't have fresh, use the dried. It can be just as good. 3 tablespoons plus 1.5 teaspoons of grated orange zest, 2 tablespoons of poppy seeds, 2 tablespoons of poppy seeds, 1 2/3 cup of confectioner's sugar, and then you might want to have a few fresh orange slices, if you cut them very, very fine, very, very thin. Now, this is how easy it is. You just preheat the oven to 350 degrees, and you're going to want to grease your 12-cup bundt pan. And then you take your first 4 ingredients, your flour, baking soda, powder, and salt, and you want to combine them together. And then at medium speed, you beat your sour cream, granulated sugar, the oil, 1/2 cup of milk, and the egg whites until they're all combined. Then you take the flour mixture that you have put together, and you want to stir that in at a low speed, and then you want to stir in 3 tablespoons of the zest and the poppy seeds. And you want to pour it into your pan, your bundt pan, and then you bake it for 55 minutes or until the toothpick, when it's inserted, comes out clean. Let it cool in the pan once it's baked. Remove it from the pan after it's easy for you to handle. Then you want to whisk together the confectionery sugar and the remaining milk and orange zest. And then you just pour that over the cake. And then you garnish it with your oranges. Now, how does that sound? Mm, good stuff. You know, it's perfect to take to a party if you're really wanting to watch what you're eating. Take your own dessert and then have your own slice. And just know you're not taking in all of those fat calories. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment. And when we come back again, telephone lines are open, 877-876-5227. And when we come back, I'll also tell you about some of the guests that are coming up next week. So don't go away. Lots more good things to share. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Now, I do want to remind you that BBS is going through a lot of changes, positive changes, and tell your friends if they want to hear our wonderful programming, including the Donna Sebo Show. All they need to do is to log in. The listening opportunity is at no charge to you at all, but you're going to be able to log in. And we do that because we are wanting to find out more about you, the listeners, and where we are being heard, and all kinds of good things. Now, I promised you that I would give you information on my upcoming guest, and we have a fabulous lineup. We're going to be talking with Bernard Haish on Monday. We're going to be talking about the God Theory. Now, that's a provocative thing, so we are going to be getting into that. Also, we're going to be talking with Susan O'Brien, the gluten-free cookbook. There are so many of you out there that are allergic to wheat. And so she has been very much involved with this for so many years due to her own personal situations. And I think you'll find some of this really interesting. So we'll be sharing some recipes with you, too, during the interview. Then Carol Edmondson, she's known as the Doodle Lady. And boy, can she doodle. But her story also is one that will touch your heart because she has had some tremendous experiences, and that's how she evolved into the doodling scene. And if you're one yourself, you're going to enjoy hearing her. Induced after-death communication with Alan Botkin, this is something that really is a whole different way of thinking, and he's going to be sharing some concepts and ideas with us. And also Dr. Diamond has a book called Facets of a Diamond. Dr. Diamond has so many different thoughts, again, that he wants to share that I know that you will be interested in. And then other guests upcoming, we're going to have, well, a guy that works for the National Geographic. He has been with him for years, and he wrote a book called Buddha or Bust, and it is really wonderful. So we're going to travel around the world with him. We'll be talking about ginseng, the divine root. I never knew about the history and the background of ginseng. There were some things I was aware of, but boy, does it have a history. So you'll learn about this wonderful, wonderful root that has so many fabulous medicinal qualities. And then Mary Getton, we're going to be talking with her about how to communicate with orcas. Yes, and her book is awesome. It's absolutely wonderful. Then, if you want to do the flip, turn your world around, well, we're going to have a guy by the name of Jared Rosen, who's going to be able to tell us exactly how to do that. So many wonderful people, and you're not going to want to miss any of the shows. And remember, once you're registered in to bbsradio.com, you're going to be able to hear archives, you're going to be able to do a lot of things. And we will be having many more of those up. So we always welcome you to join us, and be sure and tell your friends about bbsradio.com as well. Well, have you ever thought that maybe on your day off, you'd like to go to Saturn just for something new to do? I know I'm being a little facetious here because, as far as I know, nobody's dropped off there to visit any of their beaches. But I have a bunch of images about Saturn in front of me. And it, to me, it's just amazing because when you look at the planet from a distance, it's sort of similar to Earth. And then when you see the photographs from the Huygens probe, you see all of these sand dunes, and it's almost like you'd expect it to be in a sci-fi movie. It's quite fascinating. They're actually quite beautiful. And they have sand dunes there that are absolutely amazing to see. Now, these are relatively new images from this probe, revealing that Titan, Saturn's largest moon, has these tremendous, and I said Saturn, I meant Saturn's moon, and so I made a mistake there. But they have these giant sand dune deserts that bear a striking resemblance to what we have here on Earth. And as I said, when I was looking at this, and so as I'm correcting myself again, this is Saturn's moon, not Saturn itself. And there is a gentleman, he's worked for the University of Arizona. He's a planetary scientist, Ralph Lorenz. And he said, you see exactly the same kind of wind tails behind the mountains and the dune fields in places like Namibia and the Arabian Desert. However, Titan, which again is Saturn's moon, the conditions are a wee bit different than our Sahara here on good old terra firma. Titan's atmosphere is a lot more dense than ours here. Its gravity is just 1/7 as strong, and its average temperature is, and this is just a little chilly, how about a minus 289 degrees Fahrenheit? That's cold. And the sand, well, it's not what you'd think you'd find on a beach here. They actually don't know what it's made of yet. They are presuming that it's made up of organic solids or granulated ice. Now, the Titan sands, they say, look familiar because radically different processes can produce similar outcomes. There is sunlight on Titan that's too weak to generate the kind of temperature that we have here to induce winds on Earth, but they have found from their filmed observations that the gravity on Saturn's moon, on Saturn, is 400 times stronger than Earth, and it could very easily cause winds to work the same way our moon's gravity moves ocean tides. So they say in Titan's lightweight gravity, these tidal winds may be enough to shape the dramatic sandscapes with 500 foot-tall mounds that will best anything that we have here on Earth. 500 feet tall. That's almost incomprehensible. But again, I've got these photos in front of me, and they are just gorgeous. It's going to be so exciting for those of you in the younger generation when you have the opportunity to go into outer space, and I fully expect to have the opportunity before I leave this Earth. I think that there are so many people that are wanting to go and explore this unknown world that's waiting out there in the big universe. Watching Star Trek just isn't going to do it forever. This is Donna Sebo. It's been absolutely delightful sharing this time with you. I want you to remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Be the explorer. Realize that there is a rhythm in life, and you're experiencing it right now. And you need to make that rhythm what you want it to be. Good, bad, or indifferent, it's up to you, because you're the boss of your mind and your emotions. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent day, a magnificent weekend. We'll be with you again on Monday. Bye for now.